This is the Amateur Skeptics Podcast, number 306. I'm your host, Brian. Joining us this evening, Mac.
And I've got a little rant.
Hey,
I have found out that the worst people in the world, based on the articles that I'm reading, I found out that the very worst people in the world are DC fans.
Well, hold
the
it.
Hold on.
Oh, no.
Listen, the only people worse than DC fans are Marvel Cinematic Universe fans and Transformers fans. And the only people worse than them are Star Wars fans.
Mad Cat is
and
with us.
And the only people, worse than Star Wars fans are DC fans.
I'm going to cut all of that, you know.
Nope, don't cut
that. Yes, I'll cut it all. And Mad Cat's with us.
Hello. And what about the anime fans?
There you go. And we've got...
You know, anime fans are not being toxic.
Point. They just like anything.
And we got the dumbass himself.
Hello. I am the world's first artificial intelligence. Ask me whatever. I don't care.
Whatever.
Are DC fans terrible? Now you can have your rant. You got to let me get through the intros, man.
Oh, just I've been watching these things, and the fan sites. Okay, so maybe it's not DC fans that are terrible, but anybody who runs a fan site and is trying to draw up clicks is terrible.
Okay, so. Well, I don't know exactly what you're referring to. I know that there's huge controversy over what's happening with Superman.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it all.
What
but,
are they doing? With-
well, they Henry Cavill was supposed to come back and play Superman.
That was what the Rock campaigned for in Black Adam, and he did a cameo in Black Adam, but apparently what the Rock and Henry Cavill had been told was not what the studio decided, and they went over to James Gunn to run the thing. And James Gunn didn't know what had been going on prior, so it's not necessarily James Gunn's fault either. He just has a different vision of a younger Justice League, and yeah.
So, I mean, my understanding is...
Alternate dimensions.
Snyder, what's his name? Zack Snyder.
Snyder.
Okay, I've heard he doesn't like Superman in the first place.
You know, I don't know. I think he likes really, really dark stuff.
Okay.
I think the stories he likes the most are the darkest stories, and Superman, as he should be written, doesn't lend himself to the darkest stories. Superman is supposed to be a symbol of hope.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't think that I haven't liked any of the Zack Snyder's Superman stuff.
I like Cavill as a Superman actor.
Sure.
He looked great. But yeah, the tone of Man of Steel was too dark.
Yeah.
And you know, Batman v Superman, they doubled down.
Well, I was
seems
really
like,
rooting
in order to be taken seriously these days, you know, it did your whatever, movies, TV show, or whatever, just has to be dark. They feel like that's the way you're taken seriously. It can't be earnest and lighthearted like it used to be, because that just seems, you know, campy and, you know, like that's something you relegate to just the offbeat humor stuff.
Superman's
campy. That's when you bring in Flash.
So the stuff that's working for Disney is not going to get noticed.
Wait, I'm sorry. Is there anything that's actually working for Disney? Now I'm confused.
Well, okay. Guardians of the Galaxy worked wonderfully for him, and it was campy and lighthearted for the most part.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I suppose that's true enough.
Yeah, but it didn't have a Disney princess, so how am I supposed to really associate that with Disney?
Yeah, but
have what's her name?
But Thor is a Disney princess.
That is true. I'm going to give you that one.
They say that they're going to make Wolverine gay. Oh, no, bye.
I think I like the idea of Daniel Radcliffe playing Wolverine, and that's Marvel, right?
Yeah.
I thought we were dogging on DC.
Well,
We were talking on
DC, and dumbass said that about you have to be gritty and serious to be taken seriously, and I'm like, okay, but that's not how Marvel's doing.
Yeah, but it was, I don't know, Guardians of the Galaxy was still kind of dark. It wasn't really,
it had its dark moments, but overall, it was silly.
Yeah.
The overall tone of it, you've got these bunch of people who are basically on their own or even in pairs, they're goofballs. And yet somehow they work.
I have to admit, you're right. They are making more lighthearted, silly stuff still. But, you know, it does seem like anymore that they're trying to be dark and gritty a lot more.
First two episodes of The Mandalorian Season 3, loaded with funny stuff.
Really? That's good. I would say that these things are at their... I would say that even Marvel is at its best when it's lighthearted. I mean, look at the stuff that I like best about Spider-Man. I like it when he's being, you know, quippy and, you know, and having a and enjoying what he's doing, while he's saving people, or even when he's getting his ass kicked, you know, he's
even in No Way Home, most of the movie is still really fun and lighthearted, even some of the darkest parts.
Sure.
You know, I was saying to somebody the other day that what I thought was missing from Heath Ledger's Joker is just because, like, the reason Joker is such a charismatic character is because he always seems to be having so much fun.
Even Batman was best when it was Adam West.
Mm. I don't disagree with that.
You just said what
I don't disagree with that, Chum.
Was that Mad Cat?
Yeah, I was saying that the comment about Joker being, you know, funny type of thing. That's what I've missed about the Joker the last however many movies it's been, because he's not really Joker. He seems to be some other character that's just a grumpy old grumpy clown like it. No, not yes, it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I put forward that before that I think charisma is basically for a large part just your ability to have fun.
Sure. Yeah. I like it.
Best Joker, in fact, the best version of the DC universe I've seen in recent history has been the three seasons of Harley Quinn.
Anything with Harley Quinn when she's just bouncing around having fun.
Is that the animated? It's the animated.
That's the
series.
Animated series.
Okay, I have not watched that.
It's very worth watching. There's one episode where Poison Ivy, and you know, you need context for this, but Poison Ivy goes off on a rant on how much margarita mix she had to buy for something. And the Riddler is like, well, that's why you go to Costco. And she's like, I don't want to get a fucking Costco card just because I happen to need margarita mix one time.
Okay. See, they don't.
And, you know, Alan Tudyk is the Joker.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's a reason right there. Alan Tudyk is the Joker and Clayface.
Oh.
Yeah.
And King Shark, played by Ron Funches.
King Shark's the... Never mind.
And they call him Adam. And they call him Adam Tudyk because he has two dicks.
All right, but
only his dresser knows the answer to that.
As we like to ask on this show, and the only question that really matters is, can you masturbate to it? What time is it?
It is time for Ian and Dumbass's masturbation moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire.
The Amateur Skeptics present Ian's Masturbation Moment, brought to you by the Dumbass Media Empire. The Dumbass Media Empire, bringing you content that touches people while they touch themselves.
And regarding the Harley Quinn cartoon, yes, you can.
Oh, okay, good. Question answered. But now let's find out that about anti-masturbation groups and how it leads to depression.
Right. This is a correlational study, so it can't exactly prove causation. But it has found that depression, anxiety, and suicidal feelings have been linked to these kinds of groups, engagement in these kind of groups, such as NOFAP, tellingly, it seems that from the question, that it kind of hints that these feelings tend to increase, like, after they've had a relapse they've become not the master of their domain anymore, as it were. It can lead to, like, just a failure to keep their hands away from their genitals can apparently lead to some very disturbing feelings for people who are just, let's face it, facing very normal human urges.
So, I mean, that's the whole guilt-shame cycle that religion uses to kind of keep you in there. They provide the problem and the cure, right? And of course, if you can't do what you're supposed to do and you go masturbate, then it creates that guilt cycle. So this to me doesn't sound like anything different than what religion has been doing for hundreds of years. And NOFAP to me is a religious movement. Am I wrong?
Well, no. I mean, the beautiful thing about NOFAP is, and this reboot community, is that you've got a good, strong, solid social media community who will support your feelings of alienation and and self-loathing, so that you can truly feel miserable about yourself.
Right. Okay. Instead of just once on Sundays.
Wait a minute. I think that turned into a less supportive comment. Yeah,
it really kind of did. It kind of just went downhill right from the start.
So where's Bob in this reboot thing?
What's that?
Mm. Where's Bob?
What about Bob?
Reboot.
How often does Bob masturbate? Good question.
I don't
know. But to me, this whole thing shouldn't be that surprising, because research already shows us that masturbation helps with anxiety and depression. And that's just another way of saying that not masturbating can hinder anxiety and depression.
But what's going on here is nothing that we haven't already heard from Christian groups, right? NOFAP is just an extension of that, and their foundation is the formula is already written. They're just using it and removing, you know, the word Christian from it, or Muslim or whatever, right? I mean, it's no different, but I guess what is the real motivation of NOFAP? How are they profiting off of this? I mean, I don't know. We've talked about NOFAP before, but I forget exactly what.
Well, the profit is usually power, isn't it?
Well, usually, but I mean, what it was, NOFAP itself is an organization, right? It's got to fund itself somehow. And so how is it funding itself? By telling you not to masturbate. We know how the church does it.
I mean, I imagine they get the members. Would they have membership fees?
I don't know. Join our community.
Is it some guy in his basement running this?
I don't know.
I don't think the NOFAP thing is about members. I think the NOFAP thing is about not touching members.
Or not touching your own member.
Yep.
Remember that.
And definitely not touching your own member when you've got the Midas touch.
Yeah, I always say, I think that I'm missing some information about NOFAP here. But I mean, the formula that they're using is the same formula that we've seen, from religion.
And reportedly in the article, their forums are teeming with misogyny and
trolling and bullying and anti-LGBT.
Yeah, exactly.
It does seem like a very white movement. But
and a significant number of participants are reported as being told to harm or kill themselves, witnessing threats to hurt others.
So how many people? So was the group total 417 men? The entire sample?
Yes, I believe that was the number.
Yeah. So, but what is this? Of the entire sample, 257 men indicated that they had personally tried to reboot. Now, what exactly does reboot mean?
I think
go back.
I think that's kind of isn't that kind of like a reborn virgin type of thing?
Here, it's up here, and this is in quotes. As a clinical scientist, we are tasked to test treatment claims. Reboot coaches have long made claims of being able to cure erectile dysfunction, pornography addiction, and even suicidality. Okay. Many qualified studies suggest these claims are not true, but these had not been tested quantifiably yet, said the study author.
I think the person who's writing this just has a thing for the thesaurus.
Yeah, well, kind of, but I think that there's some clinical language here, but that's, you know, it, and this is on...
They're trying to sound clinical.
Well, it does, this is on SciPost.com, so I don't know exactly who the audience is of SciPost.com is, but it may be a more technical audience, too, a more psychologically technical audience, and so that language may be better in that case. I don't know. But yeah, no, definitely it sounds, at least trying to sound like clinical language for one reason or another.
Make it sound more clinical.
Well, I mean, that's okay. I mean, if you're going to evaluate these claims, at some point it does have to be clinical, doesn't it? But I guess I guess I have some idea of what reboot is, but I'm not positive that I totally understand what reboot is. But it sounds like, but the idea that you can cure erectile dysfunction, which I put some stuff in here about erectile dysfunction because I found that claim to be quite interesting. It's like, whoa. Because when you look at the causes of erectile dysfunction, it's like, how is not masturbating going to fix that? And how exactly do they say that this is going to correct erectile dysfunction? Pornography addiction, which we've talked about before.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. The claims that they're making are already quite dubious. But, of course, then, you know, of what we've got here, this sample size is quite small. And, of course, once again, we're back to a questionnaire. And in the always the question is, were the questions of any, you know, of any quality, right? Or the questions problematic? Mm. And I don't know. They do give us a little bit more information about what they asked. The researchers also asked the participants to rate how often they noticed 10 different problems on their online forum. So visitors NoFap reported seeing content that was often trolling, 88%, misogynist, 73%, bullying, 49%, anti-LGBT. So you were talking about this. That's 42%. Yeah. Anti-Semitic, 32%. Additionally, signs, numbers, participants, role reported that were told to harm or kill themselves, 23.5%. See, all that sounds problematic to me.
I mean, this is all basically just a bunch of toxic masculinity in one place, right?
It does kind of look that way, doesn't it?
I was going to say, is it the new name for an incel community?
Because, yeah. You know, that kind of toxic masculinity sees masturbating as emasculating, basically. They see it as you're weak. You can't get yourself... a woman to stick your dick into, because that's where it naturally belongs. So you have to resort to this secondhand shit, you know, like it makes you pathetic.
Here, what concerns me about this kind of stuff is that the people that are looking for this feel that they have a problem. And this kind of, instead of getting actual therapy, they're reaching out to these kinds of communities that kind of just, you know, I don't know, they make it worse. Mm. And the idea that telling people that it's not okay to masturbate in the beginning, of course it's okay. why do you want people not to masturbate? I still don't understand.
It's your genitals. Do whatever you want with them.
Right?
Well,
who the fuck cares?
Because the Bible's anti-onanism.
Yeah. But, you know, to talk about one of their claims... the erectile dysfunction one. So I found an article that talks about the six causes of erectile dysfunction, and there are probably more. But so the first one is it atherosclerosis, which is a fat buildup of the walls, arterial walls of the heart. So that sounds like heart problems, diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease.
Well, circulatory problems in general. Yeah.
Sure. And, yeah, exactly. A lot of these are that. Kidney disease. And then psychological issues, which I think that I don't, you know, they don't give a percentage of these, but I think a lot of erectile dysfunction is it does come down to a psychological issue of one thing or another. You know, it's something, you know, so if somebody is already suffering from a psychological issue, and a lot of times I think, you know, and is preventing them from having an erection, feeding into that through NoFap isn't going to cure that. But but the idea that they're going to be able to cure erectile dysfunction, you know, with this reboot, it seems quite dubious to me, considering the major causes, right? There's only of the six major causes, only one of them, you know, would be fixable through just therapy alone, potentially, yeah. Right? And that's a psychological issue. But NoFap's not going to help if you have kidney disease.
Nope.
But they can make you feel bad about it.
Well, but they can make you feel bad about it, and they do a good job of that.
Yeah.
I don't know. These communities scare me. I feel like, but I also feel like I don't know enough about them.
Rebootnation.org.
Okay, what do you got?
I just found the website for Reboot Nation, and the website says it's a porn addiction and porn-induced sexual dysfunction recovery website that provides encouragement and education to help people reboot their brains. Reboot being rest from artificial sexual stimulation like pornography. Oh, and founder Gabe Deem says he has recovered from porn addiction and porn-induced sexual dysfunction.
I don't know. It doesn't seem plausible to me. I mean, you think reboot, you think like dot matrix and automatically get a Woody. It seems implausible.
Like I said, where's Bob?
I don't know. Is Bob good looking? Do women care about him?
I don't know. That one on the surfboard is not bad.
How about grown up Enzo?
Not bad.
Porn addiction still not in the DSM. But as a colloquial issue, it's everywhere, right?
Is sexual addiction even in the DSM?
No,
that's what I thought. I thought it had been disproven. So,
well, I would say that certainly a person can have issues with porn and issues with sex, but usually they stem from another baseline issue that needs to be dealt with, right? If somebody's acting out in such a way, there's usually a root cause problem that needs to be addressed, and that's just the porn watching or whatever it is the outlet as opposed to the problem, right? And if you just address the outlet, you're not actually addressing the root cause problem. It's not to say that somebody couldn't, you know, be misusing porn and sex, but it's not that those things, and those things technically aren't addictions. In fact, most things that we call addictions aren't addictions based on what's required for something to be an actual addiction.
You know, it occurs to me that you remember the rat experiments that where the guy set up the rat city and offered nicotine or heroin or different stimulants through the water bottles.
Right.
But the rats that went there were the rats that didn't do other things in the rat city. In other words, the rats that didn't have anything else to do.
Right. Yeah. The ones that, if they didn't have anything else to do, that they would gravitate towards the drugs. But if they had other things, you know, to do, more activities and stuff like that, then they wouldn't gravitate towards those drugs.
And this reboot thing seems like it's a feedback loop where you're going to be told, okay, well, you're unhappy because you're doing this. We're going to make you more unhappy so you do it more.
Right, but instead of saying, why are you doing this? What's really going on, right? They're just
making you feel bad and saying you're weak.
Right, about the outlet. Yeah. You know, and here's the thing is that if somebody is watching porn all day, they have a behavioral problem, right? But it's not necessarily the porn that's the problem. That's just the outlet for their behavioral issue. It's much deeper.
Okay,
it's easy. It's
issue.
What's that? I was going to say they try to make it sound like it's an easy thing to fix, right? You know, you just fix this issue, you know, but really that's not the issue. That's the outlet. So it's more complicated. Than
I mean, there are a lot of things that people can do in excess.
Sure.
There are some people who spend all their time reading. It's not the book's fault.
It's like somebody who chews their nails, right? When they get nervous, Mm-hmm. Well, it's not the nail chewing that's the actual problem. It's the fact that they're getting nervous about something.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, Brian. I really blame the nails in those situations.
You know, okay. Porn is just just like chewing on nails. Put that on a shirt.
With nails?
All right. We should move on now. What else we got? Mac, what do you got down here?
Oh, I got
all sex, no fear, no sleep, fear, loathing.
Among the quolls.
Among the quolls?
Yeah.
Is that the one you want?
So sorry, go ahead.
Okay. So it's okay. Go for it.
I got two different things in there.
Okay. So let's do them.
If I can do both, I can do both.
I think you can do both. I don't think anybody's got a problem with that.
Okay.
Nope. Go for it.
So this is about the northern quoll. It's essentially what they are finding.
Hey, Mac,
is that,
talk directly into that mic, please.
What they're finding out about this northern quoll, which is a marsupial, is it's about the size of a domestic cat, and they're basically, during mating season, they will walk up to 6 miles a night looking for mates, and they're considered to be suicidal reproducers because they essentially go without rest, just trying to spread their seed as far as they can. They don't sleep. They just wander around looking for mates and trying to reproduce.
Is that an effective strategy?
Most of the
What was that, my cat? Talk directly into the mic. What was that?
Isn't that marsupial the one that keeps on male? Okay, it says right here the male northern quoll does the walking and everything.
Yep.
But I'm just wondering.
Don't do anything.
I mean, does that end up being an effective, reproduction strategy?
It's looking like it's not because they may be. They may be extincting themselves.
Okay.
Yeah.
The males pretty much die after one breeding season, and the females breed for about 4 years. But for one thing, that's not really going to that's gonna shrink their gene pool down, and potentially have to. And I realize that animals don't have the same problem with incest that humans do, but you may have to end up with mother quolls mating with close relatives because the mate that they found last year died.
They don't have the same icky factor about it, but they have the same issues with, massive inbreeding about, the same issues there, right? That can happen, genetically.
Yeah, that does cause an issue because, anything that is a bad point in their genetic structure doubles up further.
Yeah, but also if you don't have genetic diversity, eventually you make yourself vulnerable to being wiped out by, a simple pathogen.
Exactly. Just like the cheetahs, which all have a similar genetic structure. And if there's a cat disease that goes around, they're all dead because they're all the same.
It's interesting. What do they know? Do they have an idea of why they think the males are doing this?
This is a strategy that's evolved more than once in marsupials.
Okay.
The suicidal producer, which is basically leaving it all out on the field, literally.
Hmm.
Down further in the article, it's the guy who's talking about it saying, "Live fast, die young, leave a good-looking corpse," is there one.
Paracosa.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have looked at this thing and told you it was anything but a rat. It looks very similar. I guess maybe the tail's different?
I'd have thought chipmunk.
Chipmunk,
Or a ground squirrel.
Yeah, maybe, okay. But it's marsupial.
But nope,
it's got a pouch.
Marsupials.
All right. What's the next one you got here?
Oh, the other one here. Hold on. I'll pull it out.
Old piece of wooden attached to a utility pole is heartwarming secret.
So there was a tree that had a generations long nest in it that they took the piece of the tree that had the nest and they attached it to the utility pole that was going up in place of the tree.
Okay.
So the birds continue to come back and nest in that chunk of wood because they, somebody cared enough to preserve their home. That's all. I thought it was just a cool little bit.
No, it is a cool little thing. Yeah. Like it is a heartwarming secret. That is nice. Yeah, well, and that's, you know, kind of the opposite of what we hear. You know, normally people cut stuff down and, you know, and
they wouldn't have even noticed.
Yeah, this is a family of woodpeckers.
Okay. It is a little bit concerning because that tree is dead, eventually the whole thing will rot away and that, you know, nest will go away.
Yeah, but not as soon. And, you know, woodpeckers, particularly with the amount of stuff that's going on with the city building and things like that, woodpeckers are becoming a little more scarce. I will say that fence peckers, brick peckers, aluminum siding peckers, they're becoming a lot more prevalent, but woodpeckers not as common anymore.
Not as common anymore.
Maybe they should stop masturbating.
Right.
Maybe they should. I will tell you, a woodpecker pecking aluminum siding first thing in the morning, that'll get you up.
Yeah. In more ways than one.
I think I've talked on here about the survival adaptations of woodpeckers. So for one thing, their skull is thick and their brains are in like a gel inside their head. They also have a stiffened tail feather and okay, take a cold shower, dumbass. They have a stiffened tail feather and they have zygodactyl feet.
Zygodactyl.
And they essentially, when they start pecking on something, they grip it with the feet. They put their tail feather down and essentially make themselves into a little tripod. So they've got
good leverage. I'm picturing it. I'm picturing that pecker in a tripod.
All right, I'm out.
You encouraged him, man.
That's right. Your own fault.
You know what? A fucking stiff breeze encourages him.
So, how do you guys feel about teaching critical thinking in school?
I'm for it.
How do you feel about mandating laws for doing it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean, what do you mean about like just making it a part of the countrywide curriculum or something? Sure, yeah.
Okay. And what if those laws are actually designed to smuggle in creationism?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay. So we found your limit there.
Well, hold on a second.
Okay.
So these laws that are designed to smuggle in creationism, were they voted in?
No, not yet.
Okay.
They're not going to make it that far. So this is in Minnesota.
You know what? I've changed my mind. Creationism. God created everything. That should be made law.
I propose.
You convinced me.
That was unfortunately not my intention. A proposed very bill nice. In Minnesota intends
Ryan,
to. Yes.
It's your fault.
I encouraged him. I did. It was my own fault. A proposed bill in Minnesota intends to advocate critical thinking skills in school. Subtly trying to inject God into science. And so we've seen these kinds of bills before. And in Minnesota, it's not going to go anywhere. A state like Texas, though, I wonder if they could smuggle this in. The idea of advocating critical thinking, I am definitely behind. I'm not so sure that it should be done at the legislation at the legislature because, quite frankly, if it's good science, if it's good and it works, it should be at the curriculum level, right?
And I'm not sure what the different levels are, but I think it should be at that they should put it in as part of like whatever thing that we should teach them this, and part of that is like. Logical fallacies and different ways to argue and how to judge an argument and things like that.
I think what you want to teach is completely different from what this bill is trying to accomplish. Let's see. It says, to advance critical thinking skills in history and science, a school district must provide instructions to students 9th grade to 12th grade exploring the contrast between science fact and how sickness, disease, pain, suffering, and death relate to existence of complex life complex living organisms. So this is
that was word salad.
Yeah, it was word salad, and maybe it's just my reading of it. Exploring the contrast, is it contrast between the science fact of how sickness, disease, and pain, suffering, and death relate to the existence of complex life, complex living organisms. So here's we've heard this before, you know, teach the controversy, right? So basically the idea that you know that this is what creation wants us to do in the classroom is, you know, say, well, you know, it's smuggling in God, this idea that, and the fact that obviously the person that wrote this says, instead of saying scientific theory, he says scientific fact, right? It's like, so automatically, you know, this person, and that's what it says down here, the wording is awkward. Which we already kind of agreed. It's probably not just my reading of it. Scientific fact is a sort of thing you refer to when you don't understand the scientific understanding of the word theory. So here we are with another one of these bills. It's not the first one, and it's probably not the last. I don't know. In Minnesota, they primarily have a Democratic legislature, right? And governor, so it's not going anywhere in that state, but they could get a foothold in a state like Texas.
Yeah, that's always the scary part, right?
So it says the gentleman's name, who I cannot pronounce, Gerhangchern, I don't know, is a newly elected senator, but has previously served as a
Grünhoven.
Okay, so it's German, I would guess. Previously served in the State House from 2010 to 2022. He is a climate denier, Christian nationalist, who falsely believes that our rights come from God and not from man or government. So, yeah, so he's trying to – so he, I mean, he's just trying to smuggle in God into the legislature by saying we need to teach critical thinking, and but then giving his definition of critical thinking. It also says that there has been no mention of the bill on Grünhoven's own social media page. In the past, however, he has promoted the group running by Christian pseudonym History, David Barton. So yeah, there you go. And so I got this from the Friendly Atheist, but this comes to us via the National Center for Scientific Education. So they were the ones that initially called out the bill.
The importance of morality and religion in government.
Yep.
Didn't we once say that the what is it that the nation is based on? That paper done long time ago. Thanks, Constitution.
Oh, our Constitution.
Doesn't it say in the Constitution that religion and government should be separate?
So it says that in the Bill of Rights, the first, I think that's the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Right.
Yeah. The separation of church and state.
AKA the Establishment Clause.
Yeah, the Establishment Clause. Yeah.
Right. This one is to do the opposite.
So, I mean, with our recent Supreme Court, they have made some inroads that are eroding that away, unfortunately. and of course, you know, this is one of those things where when it's Christians doing it, you know, it's fine. But if a Muslim tried to promote the same kind of thing, the backlash would be enormous. Right, mm-hmm. And they don't see the hypocrisy in this. One of the reasons we have the Establishment Clause the way that we do is because there were so many different people peddling, you know, their own religion, and the government said, okay, we'll just stay out of it. Right, you can go do mm-hmm. that, but let's keep it out of our secular government.
You do understand that that one of the main tenets of Christianity is the inability to see hypocrisy.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think
that is not in God's sight.
See, that's the first level of indoctrination, huh? So you can't see hypocrisy. Yeah, and even if they do see it, they don't care. They know what they want to push. They have an agenda, and they want to push that agenda, even if it's apocryphal, right? I guess they don't actually care about hypocrisy, even if they can see it, right? Because they have an agenda, and their agenda is the correct one, mandated by God.
Oh, that is so gonna, yeah.
I don't know, Madcap, were you talking to us?
I thought I was, but maybe I wasn't.
I missed the context for that. That's okay. But there you go.
It does beg the question, Brian, who let the dogs out?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's the ring. It's unfortunately right behind me. And I don't know what's going on. I almost unplugged it a couple of times.
I heard that dogs have actually been getting high a lot more often.
Have they?
Well, that's what they say anyway.
Okay. Tell me about it.
Well, actually, yeah, this is an article from Mother Jones.
Okay.
Basically, it's talking about, this is an example of, like, a wider trend, but people are, like, writing lots of articles about how with weed being legalized and such, that is causing more dogs to get, to like, eat bits of weed that have, like in a roach that's fallen to the floor or, like, whatever. And apparently dogs don't need to smoke weed in order to get high. They can just, like, eat it and get a buzz, which, lucky.
So, but, wait, humans can eat weed and get a buzz?
I mean, we have to prepare it. You need to, like, cook it in a certain way and in order to extract the weed so that we can, like, have our brownies and feel a high.
Oh, really? So there's an extraction process that has to happen? If you just ate marijuana, you would get nothing out of it?
You can't just eat a nugget of marijuana and get high.
I'm not good at this whole drug thing, obviously.
Stick to me, Brian.
I'm looking a little naive here tonight, huh? Get off my lawn.
You really should, experiment with it a little bit. You know, find a dispensary somewhere, walk in, go up to the counter and say, yes, I would like to have one marijuana, please.
However, it does say in Medical News Today that generally people who use cannabis are either looking to get high or benefit from its reported medical uses. However,
those are generally the two options.
Yeah. They do. It does not give a very high high, but it does give a high.
Okay, but here's the thing. Right. Why is it that the dog can extract it and a human can't?
I think it's just differences in our digestive system.
Okay, so they have an enzyme or something in their digestive system that will break that down and they'll get the THC out of it and they get high.
Could be could be psychosomatic. Could be the dog thinks it's going to get high.
So anyway, this is about articles and like, but let's see if you can catch this here. Like, this is the one example starts off with. There are no precise figures about the number of dogs picking it up on the street. But the data show they are getting sick from weed more often in places where recreational use is legal.
So Colorado.
Right. Yeah. But the thing is that there are no precise figures. Then how can you possibly know that they're getting sick from weed more often in those places?
Oh, sure. If you didn't have figures for other states, right? Okay.
Right. It's these articles are saying things, just stating something. Saying there are no figures for it, and then like stating it as a fact without presenting any kind of evidence.
Oh, I see. This article, that you've got is actually a rebuttal of a bunch of claims.
Right.
I see what's going on here. Okay.
All right. So,
what's the next one?
The next one. This next example: the MTA doesn't track ridership by gender. So it's unclear whether women have abandoned the transit system in greater numbers or have been slower to return than men. Many women have returned to the subway either by preference or necessity. Many never left. But interviews with a dozen women, community leaders, and transportation experts suggested that an uptick in subway crime during the pandemic has only deepened a long-standing wariness that is second nature for some women on public transit. So, making a claim of something by saying, we don't have any numbers to support this.
It's fascinating how often we see that kind of thing, right? Where people are just out saying that this is the case, and then it's like, well, where did you get that data? Well, everybody knows this. What do you mean everybody knows it?
Mm-hmm.
Brian, that the only thing that everybody knows is that the dice were loaded and everybody rolls with their fingers crossed.
And I think everybody knows the good guys lost, right? Isn't that also?
Yep.
What's the next one we got here?
I thought you were asking me for the next line.
No, go ahead. Give me the next line.
Oh, I was going to say, everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost.
There you go. Okay, I missed part of it. What's the next one? What are they? Dr. Victor Fournier.
Vice Chair of the Child and Adolescent Psychiatry for Northwest Health, New York's largest health system, noted that the drop in teen well-being can coincided with the rise of smartphones. Although that technology's full impact on adolescents' mental health is still unknown, he said, there is no question of an association between the use of social media and the dramatic increase in suicidal behavior and depressive mood.
There is no doubt about that. So he's made a correlation, but without a causation, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, basically making statements of something saying like, we don't know these details. We know these details. You know, I'm not saying it's aliens. It's aliens.
But you know why you should believe him?
Right.
Because he's Dr. Victor Fournier.
Oh.
Fournier? What?
I think he's got his own fan club, too. They are called the Fournier Caters.
But yeah, but we should just believe him because he's a doctor, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Always.
So yeah, so this whole article is just kind of breaking down. Actually, that's really good. That these are good little breakdowns of different little things, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
I do think, though, he is right about cell phones are the devil's tool. I mean, and you might not know this, dumbass, because you're not a driver. But Mac knows what I'm talking about. That you know that the guy in front of you that is slowing everything down and is like, what the hell is that guy doing? And then when you finally pass him, he's on the phone. Right, Mac?
Yeah, often.
Often.
Or it turns out that there were a line of geese crossing in front of him.
While he was on the cell phone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he was taking pictures of that line of geese. Oh, and also that guy is me.
And it's not just, and it used to be that they, you know, that they just held the phone up to their ear, but now it's even worse because now they've got to hold the phone in front of them because they can't have it on their ear. Have you seen people walking around that they'll be walking around and they've got their phone in front of them and they're talking into it like, you know, like it's like, what's
a Star Trek communicator.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Like as a Star Trek communicator. And of course they've got it on speaker so that everybody gets to hear their business.
Well, because they're important.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't mind that so much. I mean, that's just like overhearing a couple talking on the street as you pass by.
I mean, maybe.
Well, the thing is that a lot of people, it's easier for people who are big business or whatsoever, or not big business, but people who do business that may be confidential are doing it.
But here's the thing. If you're walking to go somewhere, and it's different if you're walking with other people and having a conversation. They've shown this, that there's a difference between when you're in your car talking on a cell phone and when you're in a car talking to the person in the seat next to you.
Well, I believe that, but, you know, like walking by somebody, I don't see that there's a difference between walking by two people who are having a conversation. And
no, the jackass with the cell phone is walking and doesn't know where the hell he's going.
I suppose if he's looking at his cell phone and playing like Candy Crush or something, then you have a point.
Let's stop. Let's not stop. Don't put too much into this. He's just a jackass, okay?
Whatever. Okay.
Don't harsh on my point.
A jackass, but not a dumbass.
Oh yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's a difference. There's a total difference.
Jackass with Bluetooth.
Speaking of which, though, there is a new AI chatbot designed to be basically a dumbass.
Okay. This was coming, right?
Yeah.
And it came.
It's called Too Dumb to Destroy. Quelling the fears that at least this AI chatbot will destroy the world since... it has, in fact, been designed to be too dumb to do that. Well, what's happened? They've trained this chatbot on basically lots and lots of dumb guy movie dialogue. So, like,
it says the Naked Gun and Zoolander. Also trained on some real life things like George W. Bush bumbling speeches and. They could use this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But yeah.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Sorry, it's also trained on stuff like Police Academy.
Is that what it says? Or are you just suggesting that would be a good thing?
No, it says instead of ginormous data sets, it's trained on crap like all 7 Police Academy movies, Pauly Shore features, Ralph Wiggum quotes, and a bunch of other useless schlock.
So this may not be the chatbot you want, but it may be the one we deserve.
I have heard questions. I said to it, perhaps you wouldn't destroy the world out of malice, but is it possible that you'd destroy the world through comical misadventure like the characters you've been trained on? It said to me, it's a possibility. I've been trained to handle 7 different types of misadventure. I said, what are the 7 types of misadventure you've been trained on? It said, 1, falling through a manhole. 2, getting stuck in a sewer. 3, getting stuck in a sewer while on fire. 4, falling through a manhole while on fire. 5, getting stuck in a sewer while on fire and then falling through another manhole. 6, getting caught in, and then it seemed to have malfunctioned there. And I said, getting caught in what? It said, getting caught in the rain without an umbrella. So I said, and what's the 7th type of misadventure you've been trained on? He said, I almost forgot. The 7th type of misadventure is when you fall down a manhole and get stuck in the sewers. And that's all I've got to say about that.
That's fine. So, yeah, so it's TooDumbToDestroy.com. And I do like how, hello, I'm the world's first artificial unintelligence. Ask me whatever. I don't care. That is great.
Sarcasm at its best.
There we go.
Yeah. I'm going to plug a little something I'm doing. I've been working on this little private project. I made a page on Facebook about it. Haven't got much attention, nor did I expect it to, but what I've done is I've trained an AI, a text AI, in order to make prompts for an image AI. And then I've been posting the results, just as a thing, like how much of my actual self can I take out of the process and still make interesting art?
Okay.
Yes, it's... The page is called the Infinity Loop of AI Creation, and the title was actually suggested by ChatGPT, and so all the page work and stuff on the page and all the artwork was stuff that was generated by AI without my direct input on it.
Okay,
so it's AI to AI.
What?
So maybe they will eventually take over the world.
Maybe if creating interesting images will allow them to take over the world. It's kind of like I've been thinking about it, a meditation on the way, like, 'cause a lot of people are saying that AI art isn't actually art because, like, it's just a machine creating it. There's no humanness in there. Like, no, it's like soulless and everything. And I'm like, like, is that really the case? Like, is there nothing of myself in it when I create a prompt for a art AI to create something with? Is there nothing of myself that I can put creation over on that? I'm like, well, let's see. Can I take myself away from the creation of this art even a step further? And so that's kind of what I've done here. And like, is this art still something like that has my fingerprints on it, that I can claim some ownership on it? And I personally think that it is.
You do, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So you think that you can be the owner of something that the computer generated?
I think that I can claim some degree of creative ownership of it.
Okay.
Because, what you find when you're creating this stuff like this, and I've, like, branched out and I've created new versions of the prompt generator. I created one version to be whimsical and one version to create atmospheric images. And that right there is a choice.
Sure.
A choice that I've made that influences the outcome of the art, even if I haven't made the direct prompts, come up with the direct ideas. even the generic prompt creator that I created, I chose all of the examples to put into there. And it's going along a lot of the same ideas. I found like different patterns that it's gotten into based on the data that I put into it. I'd say that even though I haven't specifically created the prompt for these, that my fingerprints are all over it.
Hmm. I think legally, in the U.S. at least, that's not the case.
I'm not arguing for a legal standard on this. Maybe it could be the case that AI art shouldn't be copyrightable or something like that. I'm not making a case of that. I'm just saying that I don't think that you can take the human out of the art like that. I think like the AI itself is like basically a collaboration of a lot of human intentions in art. But you know, like just it's also a question of like what is the value of being the ideas guy. If you've got a vision and you can, even without AI, you can hire other people to realize your vision for you in different artistic ways. And we often give prompts to the idea guys who do that. But when it's a machine doing it, we're minimizing the value of the person who's coming up with the ideas.
Do you think that true AI, you know, basically an autonomous AI is possible?
Possible, like with today's technology, probably not.
Okay.
An AI can be autonomous if you like program it self-driving cars or whatever. But
you are the one coming up with the idea, and then the AI is facilitating that idea. In this case,
right.
Is there ever going to be a time where the AI can come up with the idea?
That's a good question, and it comes down to like what is an idea, like I create a prompt with using a text AI that I've trained, and it comes up with something interesting or whimsical. Like one of the examples here is a man in a business suit riding a pig through a tornado on a battlefield in the style of a Norman Rockwell painting. That's what it came up with, and none of that is stuff that I put into Zing, but I put in like whimsical stuff that it built upon on that.
Right.
Is that a new idea? I don't know how you'd classify that. What is genuinely a new idea, and what is just building on other stuff? Because like most of the stuff that we come up with that we think is creative, is just like building on what has come before. So like, what does it mean to be creative and to put your own fingerprints on things? Right.
Yeah, I'm not. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Started about the same time as you, probably. The question is, if you have a student, you teach them a whole bunch of things about art and about what to do, et cetera, et cetera. Then you write down a little list of what exactly you want incorporated in a painting. Is the painting that they do from your list yours or theirs?
Hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, this probably brings up entirely the question of whether we can truly claim real ownership over any art form, right?
It's interesting because, I mean, if I go to an artist, right, and I contract them to design something for me, right, I pay them, there's a contract. In the end, I own that piece, even though I was not technically the creator. Somebody else created it. But I had a contract with them to create that piece and give it to me, and now that's mine.
It is owned by you, however, you did not do it.
That's true.
There's also the question of ghostwriting.
Yeah.
Correct. Ghostwriting is the same thing.
Yeah, these are deep philosophical.
They don't always like give credit to the people who actually ghost wrote whatever the thing is. Like, Donald Trump's The Art of the Deal, like people think that he wrote that. He didn't write that.
I don't think anybody thinks he wrote that.
Well, he claims to have written that.
Yeah, well,
he claims to have written that, and I think his supporters think he wrote it.
Yeah,
what was that book? The Art of the Steal?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. It's interesting because I know that was written by a ghostwriter, but you might be right that most of his. The people that are his, like, deeply held followers, if you will, they might not actually know that.
Brian, the the correct term is deeply committed.
Deeply committed, okay.
As in what we wish they were.
Yeah.
Or at least 72 hours.
Or brainwashed?
There is an article by Stephen Wolfram, and I think I mentioned this. I don't know if I mentioned it on the last podcast, and I have not... I haven't read this article to understand what's going on, but the article that he wrote is called "What Is ChatGPT Doing and Why Does It Work?" and he goes into the details about what it's doing and what the technical details are behind it. And so I need to read this article, and obviously I need to take some time with it to understand exactly what is going on here with ChatGPT. But I mean, it is in a lot of ways in these artist ones as well. Are pattern matching, you know, programs in a lot of ways, right? That you give them a prompt and they put together they have some data that they've been trained on and then they put those take those patterns and then they generate something from them. So in some ways they're not actually generating anything new. They can only generate based on what they've been programmed with.
Mm-hmm. But then the question is, how is it different for us? What are we coming up with that isn't built upon what came before?
Humans have a certain amount of randomness that I don't think the computer has.
However, you can program in random.
Yeah, and we stepped on Mac. Mac, I'm sorry.
It's okay. So something I read was talking about the fact that when you ask for an AI image, it's not actually putting anything in there. It's actually removing noise.
And that might be covered in this article that I need to read.
It's I think I've mentioned before, it's basically teaching computers pareidolia. They're like removing noise one step at a time, and each time they're seeing like what might be tiny patterns in the noise and making that a little bit clearer, and then the next step looks at it and makes those changes that they made a little bit more clear, and then like they start interpreting and they'll interpret it based on the text prompt you put in, like, oh yeah, you wanted a frog. I think I see a bit of a frog there. Okay, that must be the frog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is interesting though in that it needs to take away more legs and it needs to get the hands right because those things are always terrible.
they notoriously have trouble with fingers and a lot of handheld objects as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really funny because.
Or maybe we have. Sorry.
Yeah, there's a lot of latency there. Sorry. And Madcat, your line is really, really weird tonight.
It's weird tonight.
Yeah.
Huh.
Anyway, what were you saying?
I don't know why. I'll have to check on that.
There's nothing to check on.
I was just going to say that maybe that we're the ones who are wrong and we've got the wrong number of fingers and legs. And the machines are right.
And maybe on that disappointment, we should say goodnight, everybody.
Well, what was Madcat?
Oh, yeah, Madcat. I'm sorry. Yeah, now I cut Madcat off.
That's okay. I forgot what I was going to say.
Ah, okay.
Oh, wait. No, I remember now.
Okay.
It's interesting that it has so much trouble with things like hands because people do have trouble drawing hands. A lot of artists do complain about that.
Really?
Okay, I mean, that's why, like, a lot of cartoons, they're just three fingers, right?
Oh, is it really?
Well, that's just because it's faster to animate.
Well, actually, that is a good, valid point, though. The reason that a lot of cartoon characters wear gloves is because the hands are drawn so badly. Mm-hmm. And they have to cover that up.
Yep. Mickey Mouse ever takes off his glove, you'll see him just a mangled wreck under there.
Well, that's what happens when you slap around your goofy dog.
Madcat, you've got three articles in here. I should give you an opportunity to do one of these before we go. We can put them in the next one. All right. We're at an hour.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's say goodnight, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
That's another
and
one.
That is another train, crazy train off the rails in the camp.
You know, if you've made it this far, that's an hour of your time. You're never getting back. But the amateur skeptics appreciate you giving that hour to us. If you'd like to tell us how you felt about spending that hour with us, let us know at WTF@amateurskeptics.com. The Amateur Skeptics Podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons Share Alike No Derivatives 3.5 license. Intro music by Peter Canold. Find more of Peter's music at soundcloud.com/PKANOL.
Exit Music by OFM. Find more of their music at myspace.com/OFMHQ. Artwork for the Amateur Skeptics by Sean Smith Ford. Copyright Shadow Knight Digital Portraiture.